Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. She joins us when we can. It makes us happy. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill. I'm glad I can make you happy.
It's very important. I like people who try to make me happy and make others happy as well. All right. Ashley in Chatham. We're going to make her happy. Maybe. Like a lot of moms during the pandemic, I gave in to my kids on something major, which in this case was the pet rats they were nagging for. They are completely devoted to her, but she came with some unwanted guests, namely pinworms. The vet treated her for it, but I just read something online that's totally freaking me out. I'm cutting and pasting it here. Quote, because pinworm eggs are light and may float in the air, it is important to sanitize and disinfect the cage on a regular basis. Unquote. What the heck? If the eggs float in the air, doesn't that mean they're drifting all over the house and now my whole family is going to have pinworms?
So to start with, I guess, pinworms are really, my understanding is pinworms are common in rats and they're difficult to get rid of completely. But my understanding of pinworms in general is that they tend to be very species specific. So, for instance, people, when their children get pinworms, they often blame it on the dog. Really, really unlikely, if impossible, to get pinworms from the dog. I don't know as much, certainly that much, about rats, but I would guess that it's not easy to get pinworms from rats. I think that it would be an issue at rat laboratories all over the place, and we would have heard something about that, especially or in addition through the aerosol. I understand that they can dry out and they're light enough that they could float in the air, but I don't think they're going to be floating all over the house. So, you know, if there's a rustling, they could potentially, in the bedding, they could potentially go up. And if you're nearby, I suppose you could inhale them and get pinworms that way. But my understanding is it's very unlikely for people to get pinworms from animals of any kind. So I think that the best thing to do is to take the advice and clean the cage frequently. So once a week, the cage should be cleaned anyway. Otherwise, you won't be able to contain the odor. And, you know, which is easy to do these days, wear a mask over your nose and your mouth when you clean the cage. And then I would go back and ask your veterinarian about either testing frequently or going ahead and just deworming. You might want to just go ahead and deworm every 3 months, which would be 4 times a year. Might not be a bad idea.
And but do they just...
It isn't a thing. Pinworms is not a big thing in laboratory animal medicine.
Right. And I think my first, long time ago, in the dark ages, I think my first experience in wormage was pinworms. But how do rats, do they have to be tested for it, or do you see them?
That I don't know. I'm sure that they show the symptoms, I would guess. The dogs, you know, would be scooting and rubbing their butts and chewing on their bottoms.
Right.
And so forth. And that dogs, actually, I don't think I've ever seen quote-unquote pinworms in dogs. But apparently that's what happens with people. They get an itchy anus. So I'm assuming that's what happens with rats, but I've never treated a rat for pinworms, to tell you the truth. I would guess that if you can see, if there are eggs that can float in the air, you should be able to see the eggs on a fecal flotation test. So bringing a stool sample in frequently and checking for the eggs. And when I say... It hasn't been a thing. It means that, to me, it means that if there were high risk of zoonotic disease, meaning disease from animal to person, that, you know, it would be something that would be more likely to be forefront in my learning experience. So, you know, talk to your veterinarian. If they're seeing rats, they know more about them than I do. And ask about, you know, what you should do to monitor that and how frequently you should be cleaning. But I would think that once a week cleaning with something that would kill the eggs and deworming or checking a stool sample on a regular basis, which would mean every couple of months, maybe every 3 months, would be prudent. But again, just like everything else, you have to assess what is your real risk of contracting worms from through the air from a rat. And I would guess it's pretty darn low.
So Ashley can relax, and that's really, I'm sure, good news, because it sounds like it was freaking her out.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot on the internet that freaks people out, but it's...
Have you noticed? All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I always think that the hardest thing, both in canine medicine, is what's referred to as Dr. Google. But the informed, quote, person who comes in and says, well, what you need to do, this is what it must be, and this is what you need to do. And so on top of the, I mean, I don't think I could be responsible for my responses. Because, you know, obviously, they've got there's a chance that they're right, but it doesn't help.
Yeah, there are a lot of people putting information out there, and some of it is good, and...
Some of it.
It's not so good, and you know, some of it is scare tactics, it seems.
Well, it gets clicks, and you know, again, if you don't have a good base it's like having a scrawny Christmas tree. Okay, you might have beautiful decorations, but if your tree's scrawny, your beautiful decorations are not going to look as good,
right?
So to speak. All right, Barbie,
and you figure too, if you've got some fairly fresh rat poop, it's unlikely to aerosolize anything, but if it's been sitting there for a month and made into powder, then you may be in trouble with eggs being aerosolized.
Right, but you know, again, what the unfortunately, and this is to the point of information is good, but if you don't know how long it takes, or even that, and I think it's fair in Ashley's case to guess that she doesn't know, she hasn't thought that first the poop has to dry out for the eggs to aerosolize.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't have that little bit of information, you know, it's harder with the decision making.
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. Barb and Torrington, I've never had a cat before, but I rescued a stray cat off the street. I've come to realize she's expecting kittens, and I don't have the first idea what to do. The vet that my neighbor recommended is super booked up and says I can bring her in, but it's like a 15-minute appointment because that's all they had. Is there a source you can suggest for me to learn how to take care of this kitty? Googling it was information overload. I just want the one site to go to. Thanks.
So I don't know that I have one site to go to, because it's not something that I have had. You know, there aren't that many pregnant cats around, certainly in the northwest corner of Connecticut. So it's not something that I've had to tell people. I can tell you that, in general, the information out there from the VCA hospitals is quite good. So you would look at VCA. They're one of the corporations, and they do put a lot of stuff on the internet. So if you want to get ideas about feeding, et cetera, you could go to a VCA website, or not website, but excuse me, information that's put out there by them. That also, if I were you, I would write down, so you've got a veterinarian who you can see who's got 15 minutes, write down your questions and your concerns and send them in. Most veterinary offices aren't open now, so send those in with your kitty. Let your kitty have an exam and ask your veterinarian if they can't answer them right now, or the technician can't answer them right now, could someone send you an email? So that would be, I think, the smartest thing is an email, you know, with specific questions to answer. That being said, cats will usually have kittens without incident. So it's not often that there'll be a problem with having the kittens, but a stray cat could have kittens that are low weight and not, maybe not fed well and may have trouble once they're born. So you want to think ahead about what to deal with that. And once you've noticed that she's pregnant, cats are only pregnant for 63 to 65 days. That's their gestation period. So you don't usually have a lot of time once you can actually see that they're pregnant, unless there's a lot of kitties in there. You want to feed a kitten food, but not a quick switchover. So there's lots of high energy requirements to growing kittens inside the uterus, but also to help with lactation, especially if there are more than one or two kittens. If there's only one or two kittens, then it's pretty easy. You don't really have to feed more than you would normally, much more than you'd normally feed, and you could still meal feed. And so what I'm saying, a gradual switchover. You don't want to take a cat who's going to have kittens in a week or 10 days and give her diarrhea because you're suddenly giving her kitten food. So you want to give a little bit at a time, canned and or dry, and do a gradual switchover over a period of about 5 to 7 days and watch the stools.
So the question is how when do you sort of notice? Because Barb starts out saying, I've never had a cat before. And she's come to realize, if she's come to realize.
Well, it's hard to notice. It's hard to notice until they're just about ready.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, so they get, if you're seeing a cat who looks normal weight but has a bulgy belly, then you're getting close to the time of whelping. And a cat will carry around one or two kittens without noticing at all. So if you haven't been to the veterinarian or haven't had someone palpate that kitty's belly, then number one, you could be just dealing with a fat cat, or number two, you could be dealing with a whole lot of kittens. So getting your cat in for that, even if it's a 15-minute appointment, is a really good idea for palpation and maybe an x-ray to see how many kittens you have, so that at 2 o'clock in the morning, if your cat suddenly stops having kittens but still looks big in the belly, you're going to have some idea of whether this is an emergency or not, because they've had all their kittens, or you don't know whether they've had all their kittens. So all of these things are good to think ahead. It would be nice if your cat was vaccinated already. In my opinion, you wouldn't vaccinate during pregnancy, but if they're not, then talk to your veterinarian about what to do about those kittens who may not be vaccinated, who may not have any, maternal antibody or not much. We don't know. They might want to run vaccine titers on the mom and check her for feline leukemia and feline AIDS virus, which is really important when you are trying to place kittens, that you know mom is tested. Because if mom tests negative, the kittens will be negative. And you always want to provide that whelping box, that's not whelping. that little kitten box, a cardboard box, or someplace in a nice quiet area where the mommy cat usually hangs out, and it should be a warm spot. So some people will put a cardboard box in a closet that you leave the door open, where you can leave the door open, and she may choose to have her kittens in there, or she might go somewhere else. Don't worry about touching the kittens. After they're born, mom won't reject them. If she's had them in the middle of the basement floor, you definitely want to pick them up and move them to a better place. This might be her first litter, and she might not know what to do. She might carry them back there, but it's okay if you want to move them back to a safe, warm spot, as long as she knows where they are. And don't have her have to travel too far to get to her food and her litter pan. I think those are the things I can think of. You want to make sure that she doesn't have parasites, too. So before she has those kittens, bring in a stool sample. So you can make sure that she's not going to pass worms to the babies.
Otherwise, can you deworm the babies? Is there instant?
You can. Okay. Yeah, at 2 weeks, you can start to deworm the babies.
All right. But this is just the more you know, basically.
Right. The more that you know, the better you can ward off those difficulties that are going to be heartbreaking if you lose a kitten, but also costly if you have a kitten in vet care for a week.
All right. I wonder And I just have this thought. Let's just hope that the kittens haven't already been born. Barb, if you know, we'd love to know. All right.
Sometimes they're born and everything's fine, and you don't have to worry about a thing. And Mom does all the work, but still getting to the vet and making sure everything's going to be okay, and write down all your questions.
Okay. Moving on to Enzo in Great Barrington. My two-month-old boxer puppy has a secondary cleft palate. He is otherwise healthy and he has a sweet disposition, so I don't mind the extra bit of trouble I have to go to in feeding him. But I'm wondering what your opinion is about whether there's a point to correcting it with surgery.
So cleft palate in puppies is something that we check for always when puppies are born. If you have a breeder who's knowledgeable, they'll check right away. It's a split in the palate on the roof of the mouth. And a secondary cleft palate is one that's farther back, so it's behind the it's the back part of the hard palate, which is in the front of the mouth. The farther back the cleft is, the more difficulty that a puppy will have. So what happens is when they try to nurse, there's not that suction if they have a big defect there. They also are at risk constantly for aspiration pneumonia. So the milk would go up into the nasal cavity and then can be aspirated as it's dripping down the back of the soft palate. And what I mean by aspirated is breathed into the lungs, and that causes a pneumonia, which is really serious. So usually puppies are identified right away, and they are tube-fed for a period of time until they can have surgery. So, yeah, I mean, even if it's a small cleft, I would recommend surgery as soon as the surgeon will do it. Have the surgery done.
All right.
Because they're going to be always at risk, not only for some puppies do okay with the tube feeding and then they get on to some soft food, but there's always this goo of mucus that's coming out the nose usually, and then if you look at the cleft, it's kind of a mess and a bit of at risk for infection. So nasal infection, sinus infection, aspiration pneumonia, those kinds of things. So, yeah, get that thing closed up.
So the short answer, yay, is yes, Enzo, please. All right.
Yes. It will not close on its own.
Okay. No,
ever.
But that's all good to know. And the other things are, you don't want to spend your life and your pet parenting or whatever worried about something happening. So this is just one of those things. Yeah, you do it and then it's done and you move on.
And it has to do with the comfort of the
of everybody. Okay, Kyle in Waterbury. When my neighbor passed away, I inherited her dog Moxie, a rat terrier mix. 6 years old, female spayed, and a total firecracker named Moxie. Anyway, the good news is I have a job where she can travel with me to job sites. The bad news is she gets car sick, and if I don't let her eat anything in the morning before we head out, she retches and whines the whole time, which is less cleanup but not a big improvement. My neighbor didn't have a car, so I guess it's all new for Moxie. Anyhow, it's making us both pretty miserable. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, that is, number one, that's too bad, because if she could go with you and... you know, it depends on if you're going to one job site, so you still need to travel every day there and back. Motion sickness in a six-year-old dog can be a little bit difficult to deal with. But there are things that you can try. So anything that you can do, it's always a matter of, you know, how much anxiety is leading to the motion sickness. So anything that you can do to reduce your anxiety would be a good idea. And the first thing I'd try is that Adaptil, which is the DAP pheromone. It's the mother's, it's a pheromone that's produced to mimic the pheromone that comes from the mom when she's nursing puppies. And so it can have a nice calming effect. The product is called Adaptil. And there's a spray and there's a collar, I believe. They still make the collars. But you could spray Adaptil in the car, say, half an hour before you get in. And you could spray a handkerchief and put it around her neck about an hour before and try that reduction of anxiety. You could also try putting her in a crate. Some dogs will do better if they can't see anything. So if you're in one of those closed-sided crates, she might do better. Rather than bouncing around the, you know, the cab of a truck or bouncing around the car. So that would be something to try. You can also try, over-the-counter is meclizine, which is the same, I believe, as Dramamine and Bonine. It's a motion sickness pill. And talk to your veterinarian about the dose of that. And then there are other natural products that you can use to reduce anxiety. Now, some dogs don't seem to be anxious at all, and they just have the motion sickness, which it makes it that much more difficult. There is an anti-vomiting medication called Serenia that you could use, but it's very expensive to give, even with a small dog. If you give the dose for car motion sickness, you're giving a $50 box every 2 days or something. So that wouldn't be something that would be practical. Meclizine's pretty inexpensive, but I don't have it work very often. Maybe it works in about 20% of the time. So those are things to try. Homeopathic remedy, Nux Vomica. I can't go into how you administer a homeopathic remedy here, but you could probably find that out online. There's no, you know, one little tablet of Nux Vomica 30C is not going to cause any problems. You could try that about an hour before going into the car. Other than that, I would try all those things first and then talk to your veterinarian about what else you might do.
All right. And, you know, who knows? One of those might work. What about Dramamine? What about regular human stuff? Is that?
Yeah, so the meclizine you can get right at the pharmacy, but I can't give out.
I didn't know that meclizine was.
Yes, the meclizine is Dramamine and Bonine.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So usually for, it's 25 milligram. It only comes in 25 milligram. And depending on the size, if this is a, 20-pound dog, they'd take a half a tablet, about 12 and a half milligrams, which would be fine, about an hour or 2 hours prior to travel. But again, you want to talk to your veterinarian about what's the maximum dose I could try, et cetera.
How long does it take to? I'm only asking because I knew someone who had this situation, and she just constantly gave the dog Dramamine, and I didn't know whether that was okay or not.
Yeah, so if you're going to have to do it every day, I don't know that it's something I would want to do. I don't think there are any side effects. It's an antihistamine.
Right. Okay.
It's an antihistamine that helps with nausea, vomiting, and with dizziness. So sometimes it works. It doesn't always work.
All right, and if you had a choice, if this is just if you were going the medicine route, if you had a choice between Dramamine and Serenia, and cost were not an object, what would you do first?
I would first still try the meclizine.
Okay.
I've tried ginger root. Ginger root's supposed to help with nausea and dizziness from motion sickness, but I haven't been able to ever give enough of it to make a difference.
That's just something
you might read about. It comes in, you can get it in capsules,
okay,
powdered ginger root.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
Potentially, if you use a few things together, that might be helpful. It's just, it gets old after, trying to do it every day.
Right.
And so it might not be a bad idea for Moxie to stay at home and get her used to being in a crate, especially if you're home during the day and you can let her out and play with her, if you can get someone else to come by and play with her. I'm assuming that's what is meant by that she's a firecracker, that she may cause problems in the house.
Yeah, or just very active and, likes... I just went, oh, yeah, she likes to go, she likes to be around, she likes to make her presence felt.
But I tell you that dogs get in trouble at job sites, too.
Yeah.
Depending on what the job site is, I've seen all kinds of stepping on nails and just all kinds of difficult things from running around loose at a job site.
So, small dog at least. Rat terrier is pretty petite, but then it's got the T word in it. So that's also an issue. Well, you have been a superior as always, Dr. Cannon, and we thank you very much. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Who let the dogs out? Who?